Good evening, guys. My name is Drew, and I'm an alcoholic. I've never seen a mic drop in the middle of a speech before. That was I like that. I like it. My sobriety date is February 13th of 2019. I am a member of the Fourth Dimension Group. We meet over at Trinity Church in Newport Richey. It's a big old speaker meeting full of young people like I see in here today, which I love to see. I do have a sponsor. I do sponsor other guys. And when I first got here, I thought people were like listing their credentials when they first got up here. And I know today that the reason why we do that is that's the stuff that keeps me sober today, right? I am active in that home group, as active as I possibly can be, and it's a miracle that I stand here before you today, just like Nick talked about. So I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It is just changed the trajectory of my life. So it's an honor and a privilege to come here to do this. Nikki asked me like 2 months ago, so I've had a good full 2 months to really think and plan out everything that I was going to say, knowing damn well that I'm going to forget at the moment that I get up here. But I have alcoholism, and you could imagine like my surprise when that was brought to my attention, and people have been trying to bring it to my attention for a little while before I really, really understood what it is that meant, and I have been raising my hand and saying those words, my name is Drew, and I'm an alcoholic, for a couple of years before I really understood what that meant to be an alcoholic. What really caught my attention when I first got here is what people would talk about, the way that they felt growing up, or the way that they felt in between drinks and things like that. I started drinking at like 16 years old. I started trying to stop drinking at 19 years old, so I don't have a long, lustrous drinking career, unfortunately. I wasn't too good at it. But what I can remember, I think the essence of what it is that we suffer from as alcoholics is separation, right? Whether that be from God, from people, from normalcy, family, things like that. And from as far back as I can remember, far before I ever had a drink, I had this sneaking suspicion that I was just not like other people, right? That I was just a little bit off. Growing up, I grew up in Largo, and I can remember like kids my age calling it like Larghetto. So I had this God, I live in Largo, you know what I mean? From as long as I can remember, nothing was ever really good enough. I had two parents that, man, they just tried their hardest. They worked as hard as they possibly could to support me and my family. I had a wonderful life. I wanted for nothing. And I had everything that, you know, a kid could probably ask for, right? I never really was denied much. And that wasn't enough, as you can imagine. But, you know, I was raised in after-school programs. I was never really left alone. No, nothing real traumatic up until a certain point. But what I can remember is, like, going through phases of fears far back, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And it would some of it was pretty natural stuff. I'm sure most kids are, like, scared of ghosts at that age. But, like, it is something that I would obsess about, right? It's all I can think about is these ghosts. And I can remember I went through a phase where I was afraid of burglars. There was this show on Discovery Channel where these guys would show you how they're able to break into your house. And I remember, like, Mom, we got to get some ADT. We got to do something in here, right? We are just asking to get robbed. And that's just the kind of mind that I have on me before I drink, right? Always just a little bit different, right? As far as I can remember, like, I had, like, this little scorecard that I would keep, and I'm knocking off things that make me different from you. And what became, like, a main focus of my life at a certain point was what was going on with my parents. I had a father that suffered from this disease. He was kind of wrapped up in that first round of, like, the pill shopping when that was, like, the new hot thing that was going on. And I started to see what was going on with my parents, right? This division that started to happen slowly. And I was a member of another 12-step fellowship. I was an Alateen. I used to go to conventions and talk about the scourge of alcoholism and what it does to families and stuff. So this idea is like alcoholism as a disease was not new to me. You know what I mean? I'd been introduced to that pretty early on. And that was enough to keep me away from drinking, right? I could see kind of what was going on with my dad. I watched my parents get divorced, and I'm still knocking things off on that list that makes me different from people. In high school, I wasn't really like into sports. I still loved to sing and dance. I was like a theater kid and a chorus kid, so I'm just trying to paint the picture the way that I felt. But on the outside, right, I recognized at a very early age that I had like an alcoholic superpower, right, that I could look at someone in their eyes, and I had this innate ability to understand what kind of crap I needed to feed them to get what I wanted out of them. I was very manipulative from a super young age, and like I said, no drinking really, man, just off. I always felt a little bit different, right? And what ended up happening was, I think the first time I can remember getting enough of this stuff in me to get that effect produced, because I think I'd sipped it here and there, It was the end of my freshman year. A lot of my friends were seniors, and they were all leaving. So I'm looking for a new group of friends. I'm full of fear, and these the cool kids invited me to a party at their house, and somebody's parents were gracious enough to allow us to drink in their backyard with impunity. It was great. The movie Project X was really big at that time. I don't know if you guys remember that at all. But this is what that felt like when I got there, right? There's like foam cannons, and there's like inflatable slides, and there's a pool, and there's a DJ, and I'm freaking out, right? I've always been a big guy. You know, I think like by the time I was a freshman in high school, I probably weighed like 220 pounds, and it's a pool party, and I just don't, I'm nervous. And I can remember there being the, I basically just had enough access to alcohol for the first time to really get where I like to get, and that is good and loaded. And I can remember getting drunk that night, and I took my shirt off, and I whipped that thing around, and there's a girl, Sophia Santiago. She's not an alcoholic, so I think I can say her name here, or I don't think she's an alcoholic. And I walked up to her, and I said, listen, I'm going to kiss you tonight. And I took a shot at tequila and then immediately puked, right? So this, and that's the thing, like, this book talks about, like, us doing these incredibly tragic things while drinking. And at that time, that's, like, the most tragic thing I've done. I threw up in front of Sophie, you know. And being 15, 16 years old, I'm not really well equipped at that time to drink continuously. I don't have the means. I don't have the ID or anything like that. But I had this idea bookmarked in my head, like, okay, there's this thing that I tried that really makes everything okay. And what was going on at that time with my father, my parents had separated. I'd kind of lost contact with him. I'd seen him a couple times in the last couple years. And on March 3rd of 2013, my father jumped off the Skyway Bridge, which was very dramatic. What happened at that moment was my suspicions, right? That idea that I'm different from other people, it was confirmed. I had no doubt in my mind that no one else understands what I'm going through right now. And then that it's just me out here alone, right? So I remembered there was this thing that really made me feel okay with who I was. And so I commenced to just start getting loaded as much, as often as I possibly could. And what that looks like for me is, right, my freshman year, my sophomore year, I'm a pretty decent student. I'm an okay student. I'm super involved in all these extracurriculars. I've got like a host of friends, and very slowly that starts to change, right? My grades start slipping. I'm full of angst. I'm, you know, not going to school. I'm skipping school. I'm doing, you know, doing things that my, you know, people my age are doing, but with a different intention. And things just started to happen, right? My family and I had outgrown my mother's house by the time I was 17. This lady expects me to, like, not steal from her purse, and she expects me to be home at a certain time, and, you know, and to not steal from other people. So I just had to go. So what I was really looking for is a good venue for me to get loaded the way that I like to get loaded, which is as often as possible. So a week before my senior year, I got an apartment. Me and the girl that I was dating at the time, we were in love. I was sure of it. And this book talks about us being like selfish and self-centered, right? And like these plans. I make all these plans and designs, right? And I can remember first getting sober the first couple times, and I knew coming in the second or third time that I was going to have to read this story about this guy, Bill. And I like had a really hard time understanding like what this story from this guy that was born in like 19, whoever, what he has to do with the fact that I'm here in Alcoholics Anonymous again. But like those parts of his story where he talks about like feeling I have arrived, right? Like everything that I need, that's the way that I felt at 17 years old with my own apartment. And I had a plan, right? I'm going to get an apartment that's right around the corner from the school. That way I make it there every day. And as you can imagine, I dropped out in like the first couple months, and things just start progressing, right? And what I start to notice at like 17, 18 years old is that like kids my age, they're starting to do stuff, right? They are applying for colleges. They have their license, which is cool. They're still in relationships like I am, but you know, a little bit different when you're living with an alcoholic like myself. I start to notice this stuff, but what's happening at that time is alcohol is so effective, right? That relief that I'm getting is way, way, way up here, and I really have no consequences yet. So it never really occurs to me that I should stop drinking, right? It's not even on my mind yet. And as you can imagine, things progress, right? I think my first criminal charge was a graffiti charge. It's pretty cool. Consider myself to be an artiste. And in a blackout, I went somewhere and tagged this place up. I'm sure it was beautiful. Cops found a can with my fingerprint on it, and I go to jail for the first time, right? No big deal. That's what I'm thinking to myself, right? Like, all right, it was just a bad night. There was someone else there. They must have snitched is what definitely would happen. And I get out, and I think at the time I had been living in that apartment. I'd probably been evicted from that apartment by that point. And I've got nowhere to go, so I come running back to my mom, right? And my mom's got two rules when I live with her. It's get a job and don't get loaded, right? Getting a job, super easier for me. Like I told you, I have that innate X-Men Superman power where I can just look at someone and I interview really well for the part of boyfriend or job and things like that. So I get a job, no problem, but that second part, man, like, this lady's crazy, right? So I'm sneaking around, I'm doing what I do, this little weaselly self that I am. And things had gradually started to change. At first, it's just getting drinking with friends and stuff, but at this point, I'm like robbing drug dealers. I'm just wiling, really. And what ends up happening is one night, she finds out that I got loaded, she kicks me out. Me being the good son that I am, I threatened to jump off the Skyway Bridge, right? That's the kind of person that I am at that time, right? Just spiteful. And she takes that seriously and has me Baker acted. And what happens in this Baker Act unit, it's over Clearwater, Windmore, lovely place. I recommend it. The food's good. But I'm sitting in there, and there's these people that come in at 7 o'clock at night, right? And I was pretty impressed. They had, they looked like they showered. They had they still had the laces in their shoes and belts on, stuff like that. And what happened was, for the first time, I kind of related to someone in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 19 at the time. There was a guy that was 21. Seemed like he got loaded the way that I got loaded. He gave me his phone number, and I got out of there and moved into this halfway house over in Clearwater. And I called the guy, and he picked me up, and he took me to a meeting. And what I suffered from the first couple times that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was this idea that alcoholism is only fueled by alcohol, right? That I should just stop drinking and everything's fine, right? But what I don't know is that at that time, when you take that stuff away from me, there's this mind that I have, right? That just seems to flare up. And I'm living in this halfway house, and I'm 19 years old, and I'm coming to these meetings because they require me to. And there's a couple things that I'm sure of. I'm pretty sure I'm too young for this stuff. And I'm positive that I am too cool for this stuff, right? I'm looking around the room, and what I would do when I would come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is I would fixate on the person that was the oldest in the room, and I would wait for them to speak and just try to disqualify myself entirely, right? And so in a matter of 3 weeks, I pick up again, get kicked out. As the cycle that we're aware of. But at this time, like I said, man, consequences are maybe right here. Relief is still way, way up here, so I'm good, right? I'm just happy to be out of this halfway house so I can get loaded the way that I like to again. And like I said, kind of the same pattern, right? I still got a plan. I'm just going to get a job. I'm going to find a pretty steady place to live, and everything's going to be fine. And so I do that, right? And in a matter of 6 months, things started progressing. I started introducing new things into my life. I am a junk box tweaker that just got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I won't talk about that stuff, but that's where I was going at that time. I'm trying new things, right? We're out there experiencing life, or so I thought. And at 20, 21 years old, I get a DUI. And it's pretty impressive getting a DUI when you don't have a license. And I can remember very vividly, right? But I can't see this stuff at this time, man. I've got one thing on my mind, and it's getting loaded, right? That's really all that I'm concerned with. And I had gotten into an accident earlier the day. The cop let me go. And a blackout later that night, I got back in the car, DUI. All right, so this stuff's starting to progress. And if you look at my charges, you can see the progression of my disease. And so it's the same thing, right? I get out of jail. My mom made me stay there for a full 30 days. That jerk, probably a good idea. And I go back to that same halfway house, right? The halfway house has got a couple rules. It's get a job, go to meetings, don't get loaded, right? So I understand at this point, I'm a pretty smart guy, all right, that if I get loaded, I'm going to have nowhere to live, right? So we're just not going to get loaded this time, right? And I start coming around meetings again. And that same separation that I've always felt, right, like I talked about earlier, it followed me here into Alcoholics Anonymous. But the difference is I was wishing and hoping against hope that it was true, right? I just did not want to be an alcoholic. It seemed like one of these things that, if I admit that, it's a pretty, there's no takesy-backsies on that, you know what I mean? You're an alcoholic once you're an alcoholic. And I recognize that. So I did some of this work this time. I did a four step. I don't think I shared everything. I made a couple amends and I just kind of stalled out. And at right around 9 months sober, it's amazing how quickly my ego comes back, right? I got a job, I'm in a relationship, don't have a license yet, but we're getting there, that type of thing. And somebody asked me if I wanted to move out, me and a couple guys from the halfway house that I lived in. And I was like, yeah, sure. Everything was great. Not a thought of drinking, really. And I remember one of my roommates asking me, he's like, hey, when we move out, do you think you're going to drink? Because I am. And once that idea was planted in my head, I'm like, okay, I'm off probation. I can, I'm not living in a halfway house where I have to stay sober to live there. Maybe we'll give it a shot. And I had turned 21 in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I was pretty sure that the drugs were the problem. So, I moved out of that halfway house. I went to the bar one night. I Ubered there. I had two what is it called? Shock Top beers. It was very manly, and nothing happened, right? Like, I didn't get struck by lightning. I had two, and I went home, and I can remember riding back on the Uber home thinking, like, man, I should have just gotten nice and loaded while I had the chance, and all of a sudden, I'm off to the races again, right? And on this last run, I faced things that I faced in the past, but just with intensity, right? I faced homelessness. I gotta hurry up and get sober. Homelessness. I basically did things that I never thought I would do to get loaded, and I found myself in places that I never thought that I would be in. I'll share one story with you. I can recall coming out of a blackout, naked, somewhere downtown St. Pete, standing outside some man's house. He's inside with his wife behind him and his dogs, and he's pointing a gun at me. And I thought I was dreaming, so I just kind of turned. She's nodding her head. And what did I do the moment that I got out of the hospital? I left there and got loaded again. Okay, so there's no amount of humility or anything like that that's going to stop me from getting loaded. No frothy emotional appeal that talks about, right? I don't care about not having a job. I don't care about relationships, family, whatever it is. I am a get loaded at any cost type of by any cost type of guy. And in my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is, I didn't get loaded every day for years and years and years, wishing that I wasn't doing it. I really enjoyed getting loaded for most of my getting loaded career, okay? But what happened at the very end, I can recall very, very vividly, is I had hit a nice little lick. I had a good sum of money that I had acquired from someone else. I booked a hotel room for a couple days. I had enough supplies to get me through for like the next week. And I can remember very vividly, I just cannot get enough of this stuff in me to turn this head off, right? And all of a sudden, at some point in getting loaded, these scales have tipped, or these consequences are way up here, and this effect produces way, way, way down here, right? And it talks about that in the book, right? That jumping off place, this place where I really can't imagine my life doing this stuff anymore, and I can't imagine my life without it. And I didn't get sober immediately. I got arrested. That's the type of alcoholic I am. And I had this sneaking suspicion sitting in jail. I think it was like a $100 bond that nobody was willing to post. I had the sneaking suspicion that if I was to leave here without doing something different, that I was probably just going to repeat that whole cycle again. I was able to see that this time. I had a moment of clarity. And in the little pod that I was in, it wasn't like an H&I meeting or anything like that. There was just a group of guys that were holding an AA meeting. And so I started attending Alcoholics Anonymous in jail this time. In the moment that I got out of there, I think I got out at like 8. I come running back home to mom. She was gracious enough to let me come home this time. And I went directly to a meeting. I went to a 9:45 meeting over in Dunedin. And that's where I stayed for the first couple weeks, where I was figuring out where I was going. And these people, they just loved on me, man. They listened to me babble. They gave me cigarettes. They drove me home, and they just showed me love, right? You know, and I was lucky enough to be able to stay with my mom for a couple weeks. But what I was doing is I was going off to treatment. So I end up going to this treatment center over in Tarpon. It's a state-run facility. I'm like one of those people when I'm in treatment that's like, I'm here voluntarily. Okay, so everybody else was court-ordered there, but I'm here voluntarily. And I really didn't do much while I was in there. I didn't learn much about triggers and things like that. They didn't really do anything for me. But I read my big book that someone had given to me, and I would listen to these meetings, these guys that were bringing in meetings every night. And little did I know that those people that were bringing in those meetings were going to be members of the fellowship that I joined, right? What I didn't know is at this time is God's taking me on this little trip, right? We're going down its path. God just kind of fronted me a little bit of grace when I first got sober. And I end up going back to the same halfway house, but now I'm in Newport Richey. So I was telling people I'm moving to Newport Richey to get sober. And I realize that sounds like a dichotomy of sorts, a paradox of sorts. But what I found that I was out there is it's the same situation, right? My ass is on fire. I'm in trouble again. I've got nowhere else to go but this halfway house. But this time, man, my butt was just kicked. I was in a tremendous amount of pain and pretty convinced that if I was to leave here or do what I want to do again, I'm probably going to get loaded. And I could see where that had been taking me. And what started happening was there was a group of guys, members of my home group today, that were bringing this meeting every Monday. And I noticed a couple things. When I first got here, like, I didn't notice like the cars that they were driving or the great jobs that they had, and that's not because I was like some spiritual being when I first arrived here. I had pretty much consigned to the fact that that was just not going to be my life, right? That I am not someone that has a steady job or is happy, generally happy most of the time. And all these guys were talking about this program, and they were talking about this God, and they were saying things like tapping into this power. And it caught my attention. And my second step experience was just as simple as, there's no way that every single one of these people is full of it, right? There's no way that they're all lying all at once. And so I just got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I got a sponsor. My sponsor is a guy that would tell me that there's a lot of sobriety at the bottom of the coffee pot. So you got to stay after the meeting to help clean it. It would tape some to a bottom of a chair, but you got to stack every chair just to wait till you find it. And what he talked about a lot was that this power that we tap into here, right, the power of God that we experience here in Alcoholics Anonymous, it is not something that is generated by my mind, right? I cannot sit at home on Thursday by myself and get the way that I'm going to feel leaving here tonight, right? And he convinced me that everything that we do here is a matter of moving our feet. And he just got me through this work really quickly. All the guys that I run around with in my home group, they all pretty much come from the same sponsorship family. We all have the same kind of tree, and we got sober the same way. And they got me active really quickly. All right, I was able to go through a four-step and identify and surrender as much as I possibly could to get me clear enough to be of service to people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my grand sponsor would talk about it like there's this channel between me and God. He's got this big booming voice. So there's this channel between you and God, and your resentments, your selfishness, your dishonesty, it's all gunked up in there, right? So you got to clear it out. It's like a Roto-Rooter. He was right, right? Because that stuff, all this stuff that blocks me, right, when I first get here, these things that I'm plagued with, it's keeping me from God. It's keeping me from other people, too. And I went through a four-step. I made a couple amends, you know, mom and sister, the people that I was already talking to, and I just kind of hung out for a little while. Right, and what started to happen to me, like right around a year sober, is I would lay down at the end of the night, and I would be plagued, like thinking about these things that I used to do to people, and like I would be like haunted by these dreams that of the things, just the dirt that I did while I was out there. I was not inventorying. I was going to some meetings. What's amazing in here is like the amazing regeneration of my ego. Right, that as soon as things get good, I'm the one doing it. Right, and I'm just kind of out of touch with God. I had right around a year sober, and I'm not really having a good time. And so I found a guy. He was talking about being in Alcoholics Anonymous and being absolutely miserable, and that's where I was at that moment. So I grabbed that guy, and he took me through this work again. And this second go around, we were very, very thorough with my ninth step, because I had a bank account full of other people's money. I had so many unanswered amends, financial and otherwise, and so I started just going out and doing this stuff. And that's the case when I first get here, and that's the case today, right? I'm motivated by one thing typically, and it's pain. And the pain that I experienced when I first got here was enough to get me through as far as I could go in the steps, and the pain that I experienced in here was enough to push me through the rest of it. And we went at it hard, you know, and I was able to make amends to my grandmother. And, you know, at the time, this was just a funny amends story. I go, Grandma, I took those pills out of your cabinet, and I was, you know, I was a bad grandson, et cetera, et cetera. And she looks at me, and she just goes, you know, so you just keep doing that AAA, son. And that's a funny story at the time, right? But I didn't know that 6 months later she was going to pass away, right? I had no idea. And I could see God all over my life in hindsight, right? Because if I had never made that amends to her, I would have been miserable at her funeral. I couldn't show up knowing that I still had some unanswered stuff to her. And that's what this stuff allows me, right? Is like a freedom that I could have never imagined, that I really didn't come here for. I come here for one reason, and it's because I'm surrendered by whatever substance I'm on at that time or the trouble that I'm in. And I get introduced to this way of life that just blows my mind. So I was able to go through the rest of my amends. I got busy inventorying. Inventorying has absolutely saved my life. It has changed my sobriety. I highly recommend that you do it at the end of every night. And I have a sponsor today that it just knows everything about me. My sponsor before was a guy that I had up on a pedestal. He's like the chancellor as far as I was concerned in my group. But I have a sponsor today, man, that just knows me in and out. And there's nothing that gets by him. And I have a relationship with him that has just grown and changed over the years. And there's two big areas where I've struggled with my sobriety, and it might surprise you. Relationships and money, right? I am a greedy, greedy, greedy person. And what's really come to me in the last couple of years or so is that this selfishness, this self-centered fear, all this stuff that we deal with, I was under the impression that that's what happens to me when I'm sober. But what I'm convinced of today is that to my very core, without God's help, I am a selfish, self-centered person that really can't see past my own nose and is pretty unwilling to help other people. And in the last 9 months of my sobriety, I would be lying to every single one of you if I told you that I've been Mr. AA. I got a job that requires me to be everywhere at once. It's a 90 hours a week job. It's taken me away from commitments. It's taken me away from being able to go into H&I or to sponsor guys. And when that really came to my attention is I had a sponsee who told me, he's like, man, I'm so glad I got you when you weren't working. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, I knew that if you sponsored me now, you couldn't give me what you used to. And I didn't quit my job at that time, as you can imagine, because I'm out here getting money, right? That's what's important. And what happened was about a month ago, I woke up and I realized that I'm the most disconnected that I've ever been. That I really am not doing much for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm filling that seat on Friday, and that's it. So I had a talk with my sponsor. I inventoried some stuff, and we quit. So what I'm convinced of today, right, for anybody in here that's new, or if you're new here and you're not having a really good time, or if you've been around here and you're not having a really good time, that this stuff is incredibly effective, right? It worked for me when I first got sober, and it's worked for me today. And really all that it requires is this intersection of where my pain and my willingness intersect, right? At any given time, I can jump back into this, and it has never failed me once. And so the last month has been awesome, man. I've been getting it. I've been out there going to as many meetings as I can, trying to help guys. I'm glad I had an opportunity to come out here and speak tonight, man, and my life is indescribably wonderful, right? That in the face of the fear that a guy like me usually experiences, which is financial fear, everything's okay, right? And in this period of growth right now, this is when I've been the closest to God. And so what I hope for all of you, if you are new in here or if you've been around here for a little while, is that if you're in as much pain that I've been in and out, I just pray that you grab someone that you relate to and you let them take you through this work, man, because it is a hell of a deal. When I first got here at 19, I would hear people say, a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I thought that was like the corniest thing that I'd ever heard. But I know what they mean today, right? When I'm first coming in here at 19, 20, 22 years old, I can't imagine having a relationship with my mom where she's excited to see me, right? In my pocket right now, there's keys to a car that I own, and there's a house key to my sister's house where she trusts me to go in there and check on her cats, right? A miracle. I get to watch people like Nick, who I met, in the same treatment center that I was in at one time, come out and just do this deal, man. Someone who's just like me, who was just incapable of staying sober, just out here doing it, right? And it's an absolute miracle. And I lose sight of that sometimes, wrapped up in me, mostly, that what we're experiencing right now, that all of us in this room here, sober together for one purpose, is the abnormality, right? That's the anomaly. That people like me are supposed to be sitting outside on that street right now, like those people are right now. And it is only through this work and a God that I really did not hear come here to meet that stuff is possible. And even more than that, you know, I watched my father go through another 12-step fellowship. I'm so selfish and self-centered. Even when I was like 12 years old, I'd be sitting in the meeting like thinking about what I would share, which I still do today. And Alcoholics Anonymous has afforded me an opportunity to do what he was just unable to, right? He had to make that supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. And because of a God that I don't fully understand today, I'm able just to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's it, right? An employee, a son, a friend. It's a miracle. So I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank you guys for letting me share.
Thank you, Drew. At this time, we'll be passing